Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are going to hear from John Marshall. I think this is probably the second time in the Virginia debates we're going to hear from him. And he's going to be talking about some exclusivity regarding the general government. But before we do, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions. So you have an opportunity here to be a part of the solution. We have some really good news. I'll just throw it out there real quick. South Dakota and Oklahoma now have and are introducing bills that can lay the groundwork for Republic Review. That's big. It's huge. We've also got a bill that I'm not sure whether it was picked up or not. In Wyoming as well for constitutional compliance. So there are three basic bills that are in three states now that are calling for constitutional adherence or enforcement and or compliance. Some people would say, oh, well, this is all nullification. You got to understand, nullification is the very first, and it's the automatic step. As soon as you prove that something is unconstitutional, a law, regulation, or something that is violating the Constitution, it automatically is nullified. It's kind of like that second nature. You know, what do you do when or somebody throws something at you? You duck. Or, you know, whether it be a punch, rock, or what have you, you duck. That's second nature. Second nature, when it comes to something that is repugnant to the law, it becomes nullified and void. There's no formality. There's no this, you know, lighting the candles in the dark. Some people make nullification seem like it's this huge sanctimonious ritual. It's not. It's just the automatic process of what you do. Most people, when they understand nullification and they put it in context to what Madison and Jefferson did, they completely miss what Madison and Jefferson did. They were not nullifying. Nullifying was just the automatic process. That's what they stated. What they were doing was they were calling for the states to coalesce, to combine their to become a collective power to force the federal government into nullifying the law itself. It is an inherent right as the stakeholders of the compact, the Constitution. They have that inherent authority. So before I get all wound up and get all excited, let me just dive into these ratification dates. But before I do, we will be having an update from Lionheart. He's reached out to me again, and we'll get some of these updates out as soon as we can get them processed and so forth. But I just want you to understand that we do have a listener drive. We're asking, we're begging, beseeching you. We're not admonishing. We're not trying to lecture you. But if you want this, if you want to fix the problem, let everybody else understand and know that there is a solution. The solution is simple. If you understand contract law, then most everybody does get a contract. They understand these concepts of, and what I will call, they understand the concepts of powers of attorney. And if you put a contract into, you know, the context of a power of attorney, then they start understanding the difference between a general power of attorney and an enumerated power of attorney. That's the exact same thing with our Constitution. So, anyway, please, please try to get as many like-minded, send emails, you know, as often as you can. Hey, are you listening to this? If you are, let me know. Have your friends let you know that they're at least listening, and you know what? Get their feedback. Tell them we have a feedback line, 425-270-5416. It's on reclaimingtherepublic.org. You're more than welcome to call, drop a, you know, a, a little note and say, hey, yeah, I really appreciate the show. Less, you know, passion and more reading. I don't know. Anyway, I'm not here to entertain. I'm not the most entertaining kind of guy. It's just not one of my strengths. And I know that that's something that can be taught, and that's something that can be, it's a skill that can be developed. We don't have enough time. We don't have the time for me to become that professional, polished entertainer to, you know, do a soft shoe shuffle or what have you. So anyway, we also have one more thing. We also have coming up some interviews with Keith Broders and John Durash and so forth. Our call-in line is 605-562-4209. When I say our call-in line, that's the listen line. You just call that number and you can listen to this show for the whole hour. You just tune it in, put it on speakerphone, and then you can listen. Anyway, it's almost like using your phone as the radio instead of having, because if we can't get your local broadcasters to carry this, and if you live in a blue state, there's probably no way they'll ever pick up a red state talk radio, but or pick up this channel, Red State Talk Radio. But we are on, if you haven't heard, we're on quite a few different stations. I think they advertise either Cincinnati or Cleveland, and there are other ones. So please, please, I beseech you to, you know, make sure that you tune in. That way, when you hear something, you can write down the podcast. You can identify, oh, okay, look at your watch. When you hear something that, wow, that is profound, because these aren't my words I'm reading. These are Madison's. These are Marshall's. These are the framers. So when you hear that, you go, man, I want to get a copy of that. You can download the podcast. You can edit it out yourself and send out my terrible reading or, you know, my projection and personifying the individual, my marginal work at doing that. But still, nevertheless, you can get these messages out. You can actually help people. You know, it's just like yesterday or when, in one of the previous cases where I was pointing out that, hey, this actually points to Article 4, Section 4, you know, because in context to an invasion, they're obligated, they're guaranteed that they're going to protect us by using the militia. Where are they now? We're under siege under a militia. Because we do not have a militia, that is why we're allowing this, because we have gotten out of this paradigm of self-government and enforcing our own constitution. That's why we've been stupid. We've been dumbified and stupefied by the public education system to make us good subjects. And I'm sure you completely understand that. So let me get into what Mr. Marshall said. This is the Virginia ratification debates. And let me see if I can pop up here and find the date. This is June 16th. And so Mr. Marshall says, he asked if the gentlemen were serious when they asserted that if the state governments had power to interfere with the militia, it was by implication. If they were, he asked, the committee, whether the least attention would not show that they were mistaken. The state governments did not derive their power from the general government, but each government derived its power from the people, and each was to act according to the powers given it. Now, that's a lot of lip service. Now, I'll tell you one thing. Marshall didn't really understand the Constitution per se, other than he understood the limitations of jurisdiction and that type of stuff. But when it came down to the people, when they use that term, the people are the sovereigns and so forth, he didn't understand the republicanism involved in this. He wasn't there, and that's why Madison was one. There's just a few people that really talked and expounded upon this, and it took a while. That's why the states didn't go to bicameral legislative bodies until after the Constitution was ratified, and then they had to have their own. And there was a little bit of learning to do, because this American republicanism, recognizing that the sub-element of government is a sovereign and is represented in this Constitution, he completely misses the fact that there are two sovereigns that are constituents to this compact. So just want to clarify that Marshall either was using selective editing, or he was really, you know, just not very, he was ignorant, not very understanding of American republicanism. There we go. He goes on and says, would any gentleman deny this? He demanded if powers not given were retained by implication. Could any man say so? Could any man say that this power was not retained by the states as they had not given it away? For, says he, does not a power remain till it is given away? The state legislatures had power to command and govern their militia before and have it still, undeniably, unless there be something in this Constitution that takes it away. For continental purposes, Congress may call forth a militia as to suppress insurrections and repel invasions. But the power given to the states by the people is not taken away, for the Constitution does not say so. If the Confederation Congress had this power, but the state legislatures had it also, the power of legislating giving them within the 10-mile square is exclusive of the states because it is expressed to be exclusive. So he's kind of clarifying this 10 nautical mile square piece of land, what we call District of Columbia. The legislative power given to Congress is exclusive, and it's called exclusive. They have exclusive power of legislating all things within that district. Why is this important? Because there are mayors that are within that district. There are civil governments and so forth, and they're trying to become a state. That would require truly an amendment for even mayors and city councils and those types of things to be set up unless it was done per Congress, because Congress would have to do that. Anyway, we'll be right back.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so Marshall continues on and he says, the truth is that power, that when power is given to the general legislature, if it is in the state legislature before, both shall exercise it, unless there be an incompatibility in the exercise by one to that by the other, or negative words precluding the state governments from it. But there are no negative words here. In other words, there's no exclusivity, that Congress shall have exclusive power over the militia. It rests, therefore, with the states. To me, it appears then unquestionable that the state governments can call forth the militia in cases the Constitution should be adopted in the same manner as they could have done before its adoption. Gentlemen have said that the states cannot defend themselves without an application to Congress because Congress can interpose. Does not every man feel a refuting of the argument of his own breast? I will show that there could not be a combination between those who formed the Constitution to take away this power. All the power restraints intended to be laid on the state governments, besides where an exclusive power is expressly given to Congress, are contained in the 10th section of the first article. In other words, these are the negative things that were placed upon the state governments. This power is not included in restrictions in that section. But what excludes every possibility of doubt is the last part of it that says, no state shall engage in war unless actually invaded or in such imminent danger as will not to admit of delay. So in other words, you can't engage in war. California just can't declare war on, you know, in Arizona or some other state. You just can't do that. But if you're under the auspices, or you're actually under a current and going on invasion, there are foreign forces coming across the southern border, then you are responsible, especially if you don't have time to wait. You are responsible. So in New Mexico, the militia started responding to the invasion going on the southern border. The governor of New Mexico, I don't know who that dolt was, and I'm not trying to be, you know, mean. That person is a constitutionally illiterate person. Whoever the governor was that did that, they should be removed and they should be banned from public service for life per the law of the land. Because here the militia was acting in the constitutional interests of the state, just as I clearly just read. That the state is responsible to doing this. And if a governor says, no, we're going to open our... They can't. This is not their decision to make. Immigration is solely controlled by the federal government. And the current laws on the land, we do not have open borders. Immigration is a process that you must apply for. You cannot just crash this nation. There's a reason why they have not been able to get enough communists into Congress to do away with that. And if somebody actually did away with that law of immigration and allowed us to be invaded, they would also have, this would require a constitutional amendment. Because right there in Article 4, Section 4, it is the United States' responsibility to protect us from invasions. They would absolutely, if they said we want to have an open, you know, open border policy that you can, any country can invade us, then they would have to amend the Constitution because that law itself would be repugnant to the Constitution. It would be in direct conflict with the Constitution and the guarantee clause. Now, he goes on and says, When invaded, they call engage in war, as also when imminent danger. This clearly proves that the states can use the militia when they find it necessary. The worthy member last up objects to the continental governments possessing the power of disciplining the militia, because though its all branches be derived from the people, he says they will form an aristocratic government, unsafe and unfit to be trusted. And then Grayson stands up and replies back. So this is the banter back and forth. He says, I only said it was constructed as to form a great aristocratic body. Okay, so Grayson defends himself. Then Marshall steps back in and says, okay, that he was not certain whether he understood him. So Marshall's just saying, okay, I'm not sure I understand you. But he thought he said so. He conceived that as the government was drawn from the people, the feelings and interests of the people would be attended to. Now see, again, Marshall is looking singularly at the Constitution and not plural or in duality, because the duality is, even though the people are the base, the stakeholders of the Constitution are the states, not the people. We have sovereigns that are supposed to protect us. That's the whole point of having a state government. If it is literally we the people and not the state governments, then the state government shouldn't exist. And we should be one nation under, you know, and definitely wouldn't be under God, because this would become the setting of a democracy, and we would be literally thrown into anarchy and tyranny. And so, anyway, going back and forth as that constantly teeters. Marshall then gets back and says, and that we should be safe in granting them power to regulate the militia. When the government is drawn from the people, continued Mr. Marshall, and depending on the people for its continuance, oppressive measures will not be attempted, as they will certainly draw on their authors the resentment of those on whom they depend. On this government, thus depending ourselves for its existence, I will rest my safety, notwithstanding the danger depicted by the honorable gentleman. I cannot help being surprised that the worthy member thought this power so dangerous. What government is able to protect you in time of war? Will any state depend on its own exertions? The consequence of such dependence and withholding this power from Congress will be that state will fall after state. Or let me clarify, because I'm trying to figure out what he's saying here. So I'll reread this. The consequence of such dependence, you know, depending upon your own state to fight any war. And let me just give you a good example. There's a game called Risk. Basically, it's a war strategy where, you know, you can take over the world. And the open sieve in war is Europe. And if you look at Europe, its size and its potential of growth of agricultural products and so forth, you don't get a lot of force and a lot of reinforcements and so forth from Europe. It's pretty limited, but it's an open sieve because all of these independent sovereign nations never unified. Now that they're unified, they're still not unified in the European Union. And what they are is they've straddled themselves economically. It's a treaty, but it is not a union like the United States. And even the United Nations is not a union like the United States. States are still, you know, literally dependent upon themselves to defend themselves. The UN cannot respond nearly as quickly as the United States can respond. Do you understand? The United Nations is dependent on nations such as America, such as Russia, China, you know, who can act very quickly. But the United Nations, this is why they want to replace the United States Constitution and bring everybody to the table under a union of communism. Anyway, so let me get back to what he's saying here. The consequence of such dependence and withholding this power from Congress will be that state will fall after state and be a sacrifice to the want of power in the general government. And this is where he uses an old adage phrased a little differently. United we are strong, divided we fall. Will you prevent the general government from drawing the militia of one state to another, when the consequence would be that every state must depend on itself? The enemy possessing the water can quickly go from one state to another. No state will spare to any its militia. Whether it conceives necessary for itself, it requires a superintending power in order to call forth the resources of all to protect all. If this is not done, each state will fall a sacrifice. This system merits the highest applause in this respect. The honorable gentleman said that a general regulation may be made to inflict punishments. Does he imagine that a militia law is to be engrafted on the scheme of government so as to render it incapable of being changed? The idea of the worthy member supposes that men renounce their own interest. This would produce general inconveniences throughout the Union and would be equally opposed by all the states. But the worthy member fears... I'm going to stop right there. That way we can, you know, pick this back up. But, you know, Marshall's making some really good points. And when it comes down to it, the reason why America was great, one of the reasons, is the way our military and the militia system was originally designed. Now we've become despotic because we now have permanency in the standing army instead of this distributive nature. We'll be right back.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, well, let me just inject a little editorializing. So there's this concept, Henry Grayson and Clay, these anti-federalists were constantly saying, hey, because you can call up the militia, it is exclusive and the states have no rights to using them. You know, this is just a terrible thing. What was the first thing that happened in the first administration of the presidency of the United States? Well, there was this Whiskey Rebellion. George Washington called upon the militia to execute the laws of the Union, went up there, arrested these guys, and sent the militia back so that the states would be able to use them to, you know, exercise their laws and to keep the peace and so forth. The militia was an integral part of law enforcement and so forth. And so we need to recover the militia in a much broader sense. As a matter of fact, when I talked to the chief of police at Spokane, Craig Meidel, I basically told him that if he wanted to reduce crime, if he wanted to reduce property crime and those types of things, he should actually look at bringing the militia back in the Spokane County and as well as Spokane City so that the people become accountable and responsible, that the, you know, Spokane can become more of a bridge for self-governance. So this, I should say, the Spokane Police Force and the sheriff and so forth. I mean, this could be this transition that we could really go back to the militia and demand that the federal government provide you with the equipment and money to ensure that everybody that wants to be a part of the militia, it can be. And, you know, create new standards or what have you, that, you know, people that serve must have, you know, permanently and are in permanent service or so forth. And even in today's workload and understanding what it takes to, you know, to actually be a good militia person, there needs to be compensation, just like what they do with reserve pay. When a person that is a reservist that is actually out on active duty, then that person gets the benefit of getting compensated when he is in service. And so those types of things can easily be fixed and easily be taken care of. Instead of it being necessarily a voluntary force, it would be a on-call force. It's kind of like your firefighters. I mean, there are volunteer firefighter forces in areas where, you know, you don't have a lot of fires, but you have people that work in the community that aren't commuting 40, 50 miles away. So a good example is Ferry County and or Penderlay or some of these other counties around Spokane. I'm just giving you this example of the metropolis and these really urban areas. I should say urban areas, these rural areas, where there's a lot of people that work or live in those counties, but they commute all the way. So you can't use a volunteer fire department in a place where you're actually commuting that kind of distance. But if you live in a populace like Wyoming or in the Dakotas and so forth, most people, you know, they may be commuting, but their commuting is still what I would consider a local commute, to where they could actually be put on call. And the laws are that when somebody is being called in the service, you know, their employers let them go. And some employers are so great about this that they even match the compensation. I know the company I worked with, if you took a cut in pay to go serve your country, we would make the difference up so you brought home the same amount of money. I mean, these are just things that we could obviously do to actually take control of our neighborhoods again, so that we don't see these cotton-picking riots. And also, it helps bridge the division of, you know, of parts of town, races, and so forth. We need to start working together, and uniting is the key. Anyway, he goes on and says this would produce general inconveniences throughout the union and would be equally opposed by all the states. But the worthy member fears that in one part of the union, they will be regulated and disciplined and in another neglected. This danger is enhanced by leaving this power to each state, for some states may attend to their militia and others may neglect them, because we've seen that. If Congress neglect our militia, we can arm them ourselves. Cannot Virginia import arms? Cannot she put them into the hands of her militiamen? See, I'm telling you, if you're in the militia, you shouldn't be buying your own guns. The state or the government would be giving you these guns. He then concluded, and these are military-grade weapons, by the way, so that you have the firepower necessary to repel a real military invasion. So you have the power necessary to take down, you know, people that want to, you know, unleash a lot of force and power. Anyway, he then concluded, and just think, you know, how vulnerable we are, even our schools and so forth, because there's nothing in the community that is a threat to that type of hostility. And what I mean by a threat, I mean something that actually guarantees a level of protection so that, you know, if some kids, you know, go wacko and start shooting or trying to, you know, blow up bombs and so forth, they can easily and quickly be taken down because you've got a militia in every county. Instead of, you know, oh, well, all the money is going to the metropolises and maybe to the sheriffs to some extent, but it is not to the extent that it should be for the militias. Anyway, Marshall then concluded by observing that the power of the governing militia was not vested in the states by implication, because being possessed of its antecedent of the adoption of the government and not being divested of it by any grant or restriction in the Constitution, they must necessarily be as fully possessed of it as ever they had been. And it could not be said that the states derived any power from that system, but retained them, though not acknowledged by any part of it. And then Grayson and Hendry and others kind of piped on, and then Madison kind of pipes on, or gets into the conversation. And this is Madison. He says this: "Mr. Chairman, let me ask this committee and the honorable member last up, which was Mr. Hendry, what we are to understand from this reasoning. The power must be vested in Congress or in the state governments, or there must be a division or concurrence. He is against division. It is a political monster. He will not give it to Congress for fear of oppression. Is it to be vested in the state governments? If so, where is the provision for general defense? If every America should be attacked, in other words, every state in America, the states would fall successively, just like John Marshall pointed out. It will prevent them from giving aid to their sister states, for as each state will expect to be attacked and wish to guard against it, each will retain its own militia for its own defense. Where is the power to be deposited then, unless in the general government, if it be dangerous to the public safety to give it exclusively to the states? If it must be divided, let him show a better manner of doing that than that which is in the Constitution. I cannot agree with the honorable gentleman that there is no check. There is a powerful check in that paper. The state governments, a lot of people, you know, made comments. Madison said this is just a barrier or parchment. Actually, it's a contract. There are very powerful parts of this contract. It is the state's responsibility to ensure that it's being followed, though. Anyway, Madison says the state governments are to govern the militia when not called forth for general national purposes, and Congress is to govern such part as may be in the actual service of the Union. Nothing can be more certain and positive than this. It expressly empowers Congress to govern them when in the service of the United States. It is then clear that the states govern them when they are not. With respect to suppressing insurrections, I say that those clauses which were mentioned by the honorable gentleman are compatible with concurrence of power. By the first Congress has called them to suppress insurrections and repel invasions of foreign powers. A concurrence in the former case is necessary because a whole state may be in insurrection against the Union. What has passed may perhaps justify this apprehension. The safety of the Union in particular states requires the general government, who have power to repel foreign invasions. The fourth section of the fourth article is perfectly consistent with the exercise of the power by the states." And he reads the words again, and he basically does the exact same thing. The words are, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion and or application of the legislature or of the executive, when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence, close quote. So domestic violence being insurrections. The word invasion here, after power had been given in the former clause to repel invasions, may be thought tantalous, but it has a different meaning from the other. This clause speaks of a particular state. It means that it shall be protected from invasion by other states. A republican government is to be guaranteed to each state, and they are to be protected from other states as well as from foreign powers. And so, as we hit this hard break, see, they were even envisioning the possibility of one state, you know, like the North attacking the South and so forth. But, the bottom line is, here they are readdressing Article 4, Section 4. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so getting back to where we were, as a matter of fact, here is the proof and evidence that the Constitution and the fourth article, section four of that fourth article, clearly identifies that there is an obligation by the states and the militia to protect invasion and insurrections. And anyway, so let me get back and where Madison was. A Republican government is to be guaranteed to each state, and that they are to be protected from invasion from other states as well as from foreign powers. And on the application by the legislature or executive, as the case may be, the militia of the other states are to be called to suppress domestic insurrections. Does this bar the states from calling forth their own militia? No, but it gives them the supplementary security to suppress insurrections and domestic violence, and I'm adding here, because they can call upon, by going to the general government, the ability to bring forth other states' militias. The other clause runs into these words: no state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any duty or on tonnage. Now, this is the Commerce Clause definition here, okay? The other clause runs in these words: no state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any duty on tonnage, keep troops or ships of wartime of peace, enter into the agreement or compact with another state or with a foreign power, or engage in war unless actually invaded or in such imminent danger as will not admit of delay. And we've already kind of read this, but he actually reads the entire part of section 10 of Article 1. They are restrained. This is Madison stating again, close quote. And then, they are restrained from making war unless invaded or in imminent danger. When in such danger they are not restrained, I can perceive no competition to these clauses. They cannot be said to be repugnant to a concurrence of the power if we object to the Constitution in this manner and consume our time in verbal criticism. We shall never put an end to the business. Now Mr. Mason gets up, and now Mr. Mason speaks, and this is the goal I told you we were going to give you. Mr. Chairman, a worthy member who has asked who are the militia, if they are not the people of this country, and if they are not to be protected from the fate of the Germans, Prussians, and etc. by our representation. I ask, who are the militia? They consist now of the whole people except a few public officers. Why is this gold? Because the militia is every single one of us. It is all of us. We are all supposed to contribute to our own security. They couldn't fathom a self-government without everybody having a responsibility to stepping up and protecting themselves. You know, how great would it be if all of a sudden, you know, we actually went back to the system so that those great people that have, you know, all this opulence and they can pay for all of these things, but actually they've been paying for the government or have been big promoters. So a socialist would then have, you know, this huge mansion like, you know, Al Gore, this huge mansion, but not, it'd be completely dependent on government to suppress fire, to suppress invasions and so forth. So he has all of this to lose and does nothing for himself to ensure that he has his own security instead of being quote unquote dependent on the, you know, the civil government and so forth, because we don't have a militia, because we've changed our paradigm that we are no longer responsible, that we depend upon others. Any American, anybody that has, whether you have lots or very little, we are all responsible to protecting our liberty and all responsible for securing it via whatever means necessary. I know that sounds like an altruistic type of thing and an ultimatum as well, but it is the truth. We all must be willing to, you know, make the ultimate sacrifice in defending liberty for ourselves, for our family, for our posterity. Anyway, Mason goes on and says, but I cannot say who will be the militia of the future day. If that paper on the table gets no alteration, the militia of the future day may not consist of all classes, high and low, and rich and poor, but they may be confined to the lower and middle classes of the people. Now, if we start deviating, so he's making this assertion, but this assertion is based on the fact that we ignore and we violate the Constitution by not maintaining this. Because the only way that he's right in this, and he is right, is because the Constitution has been violated. Not because he's asserting that Constitution will allow it. No, it won't. What will allow that to happen is the states allowing their Constitution to get perverted and be marginalized, and that's why we have standing armies today. It was not something that was within the Constitution that created this standing army. It's not there. It's very apparent it's not there. But his assertion here is that it could happen because he doesn't see some kind of protection. That's why he wanted a Bill of Rights. But the fact of the matter is, the powers were enumerated. This is all they can do, and this is all they could have. Everything else, and we should have kept them accountable in maintaining the militia. There should have been far more efforts and exertions by the states in maintaining the militia. But anyway, moving on, granting exclusion to the higher classes of people, which we have seen in this new system, this unconstitutional system. If we should see ever that day, the most ignominious punishments and heavy fines may be expected. Under the present government, all ranks of people are subject to militia duty. Under such a full and equal representation of ours, there can be no ignominious punishment inflicted. But under this national, or rather consolidated government, the case will be different. The representation being so small and inadequate, they will have no fellow feeling for the people. They may be discriminate people in their own predicament and exempt from duties of the officers and lowest creatures of the national government. If there were a more particular definition of the powers and a clause exempting the militia from martial law, and so, you know, and what he's doing is I'm going to use the word grandstand, because I see what Mason's doing is he wants to get his Bill of Rights. Do you know who wrote the Bill of Rights for Virginia? Mason. Madison helped him, but Mason. For the Virginia Constitution prior to the U.S. Constitution. And so here we go. Mason is proposing these grand Bill of Rights that obviously, and if you didn't know, he actually had a Bill of Rights already written up to, you know, to give to the general government, to use these as the Bill of Rights. I don't want to say arrogant, but that was maybe nobly arrogant. How about that? Anyway, back to what I just said, the militia from, okay, a clause exempting the militia from martial law, except when in actual service and from fines and punishments of an unusual nature, then we might expect the militia would be what they are. But if this not be the case, we cannot say how long all cases of people will be included in the militia. There will not be the same reason to expect, because the governments will be administered by different people. We know what they are now, but we know not how soon they may be altered. And it took a couple of lifetimes. It took generations for them to slowly ignore and get people to no longer understand this Constitution and how it was defined and so forth, to get people to start believing that, this Constitution means something different. This is what it means, and lying and duplicity and so forth. So now Mr. Nicholas gets up. George Nicholas gets up to respond to Mr. Mason, and I don't have the time because I got a little over a minute to read this, and this is a good retort that he has. The fact of the matter is that in looking at Mason's words, he was a very smart man, a very insightful, and I have said before that we didn't need a Bill of Rights, but I've also conceded that we need a Bill of Rights had we done what we should have done with the Constitution and abolished slavery, we would not be in this mess today. We would not have such great division by misinformation and by these demagogues trying to create something that never was. Now, I'm not saying that slavery never was. What I am saying is that slavery was a process that unfortunately the whole world had to cast off. This concept that America invented slavery and that America was the most unjust nation in the world, that Kaepernick and all these other liars are out there stating, you don't understand. And that's why I tell people, read the original Declaration of Independence. Slavery was instituted here by the king. Slavery was instituted because it was the crown that allowed and actually pursued laws that Thomas Jefferson pointed out, and actually tried to play divisive roles when he thought the colonists were becoming a little bit too independent. And so they actually supported and put guns in the hands of slaves and created massacres and so forth. Anyway, with that, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And we will be back with more Virginia ratification debates. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.